You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. The Defenders Live program is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and you can learn more at defendersfje.org or defendersfje.blogspot.com. If you want to follow old shows from this station, from old Defenders Live programs, you can listen to the archives that are on my blogspot, which is defendersliveradio.blogspot.com. So I'll repeat all of that later in the show. But thank you for tuning in, and I'll probably give you a little heads up that we are going to be tweaking and working on our defendersfje.org website. We've had it for a long time. It's got kind of an old, heavy feel to it. And it's sort of time to shake it out and rejuvenate it, fluff it up, and make it pop just a little bit more. And so I look forward to presenting that sometime over the next couple of months. In the meantime, it is an archive. So there's a lot of information there about Defenders' history and actions, commentary, campaigns, and different issues that we have followed over the course of the 10 years of the Defenders' existence in Richmond. So you can check it out. But again, we will hope to have a fluffy new look. Although fluffy is probably not a good word for an activist site, so, you know, but you know what I'm trying to say. So today, my guest will be Phil Woleto. He's editor of the Virginia Defender newspaper, and he is running just a smidge behind. So when he gets here, he will jump right on, and we will be covering some of the headline stories from the autumn issue of the Virginia Defender newspaper, which hit the streets this weekend, just in time for the elections tomorrow. Not everything in the newspaper is geared toward the elections. However, as we all know, if we are thinking about our community and thinking about our place in the world, there isn't an issue out there that isn't in some way connected to the dynamic through which we would select our representatives, right? Who do you want representing you on the school board, on the city council, as mayor, in the state legislature, and of course for president? It was several years ago when I think it was before the Obama candidacy the first time around, when I heard a presentation at the University of Richmond by a guy whose name I'm not going to remember now because I'm just thinking up this little story. But he had something to do with, I think there's the Kennedy School for Professional Development or Leadership Studies, something like that, up in Massachusetts. And he was here to talk about elections, especially particular presidential elections, and what they represent for the country when they happen. And what they tend to represent is very little about facts, which would then sort of make you think that the Republican campaign, or those folks in the Republican camp who said that, you know, fact checkers are overrated and, you know, sort of an unnecessary distraction as you are trying to make your political score points during the election campaign. But basically what he then proceeded to say was that presidential elections are about our national identity. They are about us expressing what we believe our national identity is, and whether or not the person in the form of one candidate or another represents what we believe our country is all about at any given moment, or at the moment of the election. So that is a very interesting perspective. And actually, once I sort of heard that and thought it through, I thought, well, okay, that makes a lot more sense than some of the bickering that goes on about whether or not one candidate or another is making promises that they're going to keep. Because, you know, at my ripe, wonderful age of 52, I have been through enough presidential elections that I don't believe any campaign promises, not any of them. It just never bears out. It's really quite fascinating. If we go back and check the record and see that, you know, some promises were kept, what I find is it is so not about that. It really is an emotional process that the community gets taken through in order to decide who is going to be president of the United States. Because if we really looked at it, if we really, really looked at it, if you went and read the Constitution, which I know most of you haven't done since high school, and even then, you probably skimmed it just in time for the quiz. If you read the Constitution, if you have tracked what presidents have done over the course of the last 200 odd years of our country, you will find that they have a very specific job to do. One is to sort of maintain the image of the national identity, and the other is to protect the interests or further the interests of the United States as an entity, as a business entity, as a corporate entity, as a national entity. And, you know, it depends on what nation you reside in as to what those interests are. And some of our interests have been, or when I say our, I mean that of the United States as a nation, have been to further its imperial interests. It has redefined and taken on the new form of wanting to be, you know, being the world superpower, and then what that means in relation to all other nations. The president's job is to maintain that. The rest of it is how he maintains face and how he might, you know, effect some change that is being demanded by the people, because he does have to respond. Now, you know, we have all these other mechanisms by which we are distracted at a certain level, and then the people who actually have the president's attention are those who are going to be able to fork over enough money to keep him in power. So, you know, it gets messier and messier and messier. But in essence, the presidential election is our reflection of who we think we are in the world. And that's why it becomes so heated and why it can become vicious and dirty and raunchy and bad, and why we find that we are looking for real motivation and leadership and really profoundly good oratory to carry us through it. And we hope that some of that oratory actually represents what is good and can be found to be good as we figure out who is going to represent the nation in its leadership role. So while all of that is going on, though, we cannot forget what we are struggling for each and every day, and that is social justice, human rights, and moving forward as people in this world. And however the president and his administration is going to actually represent that or actually effect change for that is dependent upon us. That's the people have to do it. The people have to push it forward. The people cannot let the pressure die, or we lose. And it's that simple. So on that note, I'd like to I'd like to welcome to the studio Phil Woledo, editor of the Virginia Defender newspaper.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Glad to see you, and I see you brought stacks and stacks of the paper so that we can start this conversation. To the two headlines on the front page this time, one is about the revived plan for a ballpark in Chaco Bottom, and the other is a story about the pending war in the Republic of Mali, We can jump right in to talking about Chaco Bottom, and then we'll talk a little bit about Mali. You think?
Both issues of which relate to the principle of the right of oppressed peoples to self-determination.
That's right.
We just came out with the 40th issue, 40 issue of the Virginia Defender. Started in February of 2005. This is volume 8, number 3, autumn 2012, And it is on the streets and online. If you go to defendersfje.org and to the left side of the homepage, click Virginia Defender, and on that page, click Current Issue, you'll get the paper absolutely free. Or you can pick it up absolutely free in your neighborhood. We've got a kind of an action-packed issue this year. We took on quite a number of targets, and the front page above the fold story is business interest push for ballpark in Richmond's historic slave district.
We may be experiencing technical difficulties, and I just want to put that out there. Phil is going to keep talking, but it's possible that if you are not hearing him, it is because we have we've just experienced an audio glitch. Why don't you come over here? So he will come and use my mic while we work on that little problem. Here we go.
There we go. Okay, well, just as WRAR occasionally has a technical glitch, so does the Virginia Defender newspaper, and we thought it was going to be Hurricane Sandy, so we wired up the cell phone, smartphone to be a hotspot to be able to operate the internet off the laptop and transfer files by flash drive to our PC, which has the design program, and bring the PC into the family van sitting in the carport so we could plug it into the cigarette lighter and ride through the storm, laying out the paper in the midst of a hurricane.
But that was too romantic an idea.
Yeah, we were very disappointed. We didn't get to take a picture of the van rocking over back and forth. We were going to put a sign, if the van's rocking, don't come knocking during a hurricane. But that didn't happen, and the paper is out on time and on the streets and also online at defendersfje.org. Click the left side on the menu, the Virginia Defender, and on that page, Current Issue, and you can find it. Or at 275 different distribution spots in the greater Richmond area. What we wanted to point out a couple of the highlights of the paper. It's really an action-packed issue. We took on a lot of issues, a lot of struggles this time. I told Anna I think I was in a bad mood, and we flailed out in many directions, but that's because there was many challenges facing the community that we wanted to address. One is we have a two-page spread on the Richmond City Jail. We had planned to do a report on the jail based on our own investigation and other published reports. And we sent Sheriff C.T. Woody, we asked him if he would answer some questions. He said yes. And we sent him a list of questions dealing with, I believe it's 11 separate issues in the jail. And he wrote back and said he was very offended. That's not the word he used, but he resented the defender believing the complaints of inmates who he said are in a jail that is approved at 100% ratings by the Department of Corrections, and they have all types of programs, including ballroom dancing, to expose them to the finer things in life. And we had obviously already made up our minds, and he was not very pleased. So we printed our questions and his response. That's the two pages. And we pointed out that the Department of Corrections also awarded 100% ratings across the board to the city jail when it was administered by Sheriff Michelle Mitchell. And we said, basically, you're saying you run the jail as well as she did, which is a stunningly low bar, to say the least. So we hope that the sheriff will be open to actually answering the questions that we sent him. We're going to be pursuing the issue. We're in touch with many inmates and their families, and we're hoping that the community will take an interest in speaking out. They certainly have an interest in the jail. Each year, 30,000 people pass through the Richmond City Jail. 30,000, that's their own figures. There's only 205,000 people in this city.
That's also the population, I think, of students that attend VCU.
30,000?
It's roughly 30,000.
Yeah. So like if all the students at VCU were to pass through the jail. Now, some of those may be the same person more than one time, but it's not, you know, it's not one person going 30,000 times. So it's a tremendous issue for the city, and the conditions are horrendous, absolutely horrendous. The lack of fresh, cool water on the tiers during the summer, which reaches over 100 degrees inside the jail, the fact that it's now getting cold, and the inmates wear clothing that is short-sleeved and short pants, slippers with no socks. And it's just unbelievable that these conditions are allowed to continue. And we had hoped that the sheriff would work with us. We offered some concrete suggestions on how to improve conditions with support from the community. And he, I think one of the things that bothered me the most was when he said that he set up a program for prisoners to do work, inmates to do work outside the jail, which has saved the city many thousands of dollars. These folks are working for free. These folks are providing unpaid labor. And even though it gets them out of the jail, which I'm sure is something that motivates people to volunteer for this, I've been told it's a volunteer program. We have a word in Virginia for people who are held in captivity and made to work for no wages. It's an old system that goes back many, many years, and I really hate to see it being revived in the Richmond City Jail. I'm getting a timeout for our station identification, and I will turn this single mic, which we are sharing, back to your host.
And thank you for tuning in today to The Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3 LPFM. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. And Defenders Live comes to you every Monday from 12 to 12:30, and you can listen live at WRIR.org, and you can listen on Tuesdays at 11 o'clock when we are rebroadcast. I'd like to thank our engineer, Gabby Schwartz, today, because it's Shantz. I do it every time. Gabby Shantz. And she is stepping up, and she's doing a great job as usual. So thank you, Gabby. And Phil, let's take it back. And as you are talking about Sheriff Woody and these really, it is a kind of an interesting thing, because I think that we were around during the tenure of Sheriff Mitchell. We have now been around during the tenure of Sheriff Woody. And always there are these high expectations when somebody new comes in. And you also want to give them the room to, one, demonstrate what it is that they can do. And we have in the past talked about some of the reforms and some of the changes in the city jail, but there are clearly some profound needs that are still there that some people believe are going to be addressed by the construction of a new building. What do you think?
Well, the most talked about issue in the city jail is that it's terribly overcrowded. It was built for about 830-840 inmates, and it regularly holds over 1,300. The new jail holds a little over 1,000. So the mayor and the sheriff are talking about ways to reduce the numbers of people in the jail, but unless they have a very concrete program in place, when the jail opens in, I believe it's January 2014, they're going to still have a problem with crowding. But when Sheriff Woody came in, we really had high expectations that there would be changes, and there were some very good changes. He makes the point that he's instituted some important new programs, and that's true, and we've reported on them in the past, and there was an openness that was very refreshing after Sheriff Mitchell's departure. But under his tenure, six-year tenure, 31 people have died while in custody of the jail, not necessarily in the jail, but perhaps gotten sick and gone to the hospital and so on. 31, including six suicides. And this is, according to a published report in the Daily newspaper, 2.5 times the daily rate, the annual rate for institutions, jails of a similar size, and even higher than it was under Sheriff Mitchell. So there are at least three or four lawsuits pending against the jail's administration over some of these deaths, and there are serious questions as to whether they could have been avoided. I know we don't have a whole lot of time today. There's a couple of issues I'd really like to hit. The trial of Ashley Williams is coming up on November 28th. That's the young Richmond mother who was accused of neglecting her child, Deshaun, so that he starved to death. And I'm sure you're familiar with this case, and that there is now indications, I shouldn't say evidence, because there hasn't been a thorough examination of the case. There's no evidence of any child neglect, but there's a possibility that Deshaun suffered from a genetic disease that led to his severe underweight condition, a condition that is shared by at least three young boys in his close family, two cousins and a nephew. She's facing, Ashley Williams is facing 40 to 45 years in prison. And it very much looks like it was a case that the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office took on because it had a glaring attention-getting headline, Richmond mother starves child to death. And there's really no evidence that that happened. They even filed the charges before the autopsy was completed. It shows you that it was more of a political motivation. So we asked people to turn out to the trial on November 28th in the John Marshall Courts Building, room 307, at 9 o'clock in the morning, and that information is on our website as well as in our newspaper. We also draw attention to the fact that business interests in the community at the highest level, or the lowest level, depending on your point of view, the Greater Richmond Chamber of Commerce, and Venture Richmond are calling for putting a ballpark, a commercial sports stadium in Chaco Bottom, on the site of the former slave market area. And even though they claim that that all of that area is to the west, the northeast corner of their stadium will be on the site of the former Omohundro Jail, which is now Exxon gas station. Their initial call in August in the Richmond Times-Dispatch had no mention of the historic importance of the area, and there was a response, and there have been meetings, and there have been lines drawn in the sand, and we hope that you will read this front page above the fold story in the Defender newspaper. We also want to draw your attention to several articles on the U.S. intentions about the West African Republic of Mali. We haven't heard Mali very much in this country at all until a few fighters who identify with Al-Qaeda, who fled the fighting in Libya, promoted by the United States, landed in Mali, and the U.S. government is using their presence as an excuse for encouraging a regional intervention, military intervention in Mali, which will put the U.S. In a de facto position of being running the country. This is a very, very dangerous development for Africa and has particular importance for Richmond, many of whose black residents can trace their ancestry to the old Malian Empire. We have a sister city relationship between Richmond and the city of Ségou, or the second largest city in Mali. There have been an increase in contacts between the two cities in recent years. Do I have 2 minutes to?
No, you have one.
I have one. There was a press conference this morning featuring former mayor and governor Douglas Wilder and former city councilman Chuck Richardson to oppose the ganging up by the Richmond Democratic Party on Fifth District Council person Marty Jewell, who is running for re-election and is opposed by someone named Parker, who is identifies himself as a part-time consultant for museums. I don't know anyone who ever heard of Parker before, but he's being supported by Mayor Jones, Senator Henry Marsh, Senator Donald McEachin, Sheriff C.T. Woody, and the other luminaries of the Democratic Party in the area in an unprecedented attempt to unseat an incumbent. I should point out that Mr. Parker happens to be white, so the black political elite has lined up behind a white challenger to the most outspoken, community-minded, community-grounded progressive candidate on Richmond City Council, and we ask all of the folks in the 5th District to remember that the Defender has strongly endorsed Marty Jewell for City Council, along with Reva Trammell in the 9th District, and Kimberly Gray for the 2nd District seat on Richmond School Board. That's very important, and we hope that you will do that. And for any folks who are free tonight at 7 o'clock, come to VCU Commons Theater to hear a presentation on Working People's Struggles, sponsored by the VCU SDS. I'll be one of the scheduled speakers. Thank you.
All right. And that was Defenders Live with Phil Woleto, editor of the Virginia Defender. No, we're grateful that you come on the show to talk about the issues that are covered in the newspaper, and look forward to the next issue. But really look forward to attending and participating in some of these issues, as there are events that reflect those issues as well as their coverage in the newspaper. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, give you a quick reminder that not only tonight's program on working people's movements at VCU in the Student Commons, but also Thursday there's a public forum on housing in segregation. And then again on November 10th, there is the Peace Center auction and dinner, where they commemorate their annual Peacemaker of the Year award. And then, of course, don't forget the Thanksgiving feast coming up on Thursday, November 22nd. And then the following week will be the trial of Ashley Williams, as Phil talked about. But thanks, Phil, again, for coming on to cover those issues.
Thanks for having me. It's always nice to have a friendly program, a radio program, regular friendly program, supporting the Virginia Defender newspaper. Thank you, Anna.
You bet. All right. So be with us next week when we have Queen Zakiya Shabazz. She is going to be talking about the issue of not just lead poisoning, which is an historic issue for Richmond housing, but also mold as a health hazard, as a public health hazard in the city of Hopewell and Petersburg. So thank you again for tuning in this week, and we will talk to you next week. Keep up the struggle, and remember that kindness does matter. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.